5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice in its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister. The look it was giving me.
What are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sheriff, Dio!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show.
It makes me wonder with these feds coming in and just kind of stepping on everybody's toes and some degree with, especially with like cases like Bob Garrett, you know, downright violations of civil rights and things. I mean, I can see some real problems with this.
Right. And now you said earlier that his wife was also, she was getting harassment from local law enforcement where they live.
Yeah. What was basically happening is, she was getting pulled over for no reason. Anytime she left the house, she would be pulled over. They would kind of harass her. Where are you going to? Where are you coming from? Just, you know, and she'd be like, well, why are you guys pulling me over? And they never really would give her an answer. It was and it was going on constantly. And that's the other thing is that's what bothered Bob more than them harassing him when he goes out on these, different, I'll tell you a little bit more about it, John. It goes even farther than that. Like,
hey guys,
I don't think. Yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt. I got an emergency call. I got to go attend to. It's a 911 hangup. I got to go to. I apologize. Okay. I got to bow out. Y'all have a great rest of the evening. I'm gonna have to follow up on this on the radio later on. Okay.
All right. Sounds good, Jack.
All right. Thanks, man. Y'all take care.
Please visit us at SasquatchChronicles.com for uncut audio, extended shows, and much more. Episode 71. If you're listening to this episode and you have not yet heard episode 70, please go back, listen to episode 70 first, and then listen to this episode. As you recall from episode 70, we had left at the end of the show. There was a 911 call that a police officer was responding to who was on the show, and it ended up being a bogus call. So tonight, what we're going to do, we'll continue on with our conversation from episode 70. We'll also bring back on Jack, who was a police officer that was called out to that 911 call, and get his take on what had happened. We'll also be welcoming Bob Garrett, who had the torn up camp video, as well as Travis, who did some work for the forestry department and had some run-in with the federal agents after an aggressive encounter. Hang on, everyone, as we wrap this up.
His wife was getting harassed every time. Bob gets harassed every time they go out. And I've verified this more than just with Bob. I've verified this with guys he goes out with. they'll say that he's almost word for word what's going on when they go out. His wife was starting to get harassments. You know, anytime she left the home or anytime that she, you know, she was constantly being harassed, and that's what bothered him. And when the torn up camp video kind of settled down, everything cooled off, all of this, for the most part, against his wife stopped. It never really stopped with Bob when he goes out at night. He says for some reason these guys know where they're at. He said they were just coming home the other night, and this sheriff car shows up out of nowhere, rides almost within inches. They thought that it was going to ram them. Didn't have its lights on, but came right up on the bumper within inches. They were kind of, you know, shocked a little bit by it. And they're out on some country road. And then he backs off. And then he runs up on him again like he's going to ram him. And so they just keep riding straight. They're just waiting for the lights to come on, you know, and they're going to pull over. But they just keep going. And then whoever was in the car kept doing that a couple more times, acting like he was going to ram them. They eventually pulled off to the side of the road, and the cop just kept going. But the cop never turned his lights on. He never passed them. They thought for sure he was going to ram them. I mean, he would just come up at like 90 miles an hour and come within inches of their bumper, and he would ride them for a while. And then, you know, it was just odd. It's just odd things going on. He says they'll go out to their areas where they go. And one of the things Ken had mentioned in our that part two of that episode 68 we were talking about, Ken would say he had told me, hey, they were out at such and such location, fired off. And this is emails from the Department of the Interior out to, you know, heading someplace in Texas, talking to the same counterpart in Texas. Then the person in Texas was talking to the guy in Washington in the Department of Interior and saying, made contact with Garrett and group. They were at such and such location at this time, fired off rounds in their general area. Garrett and group left. So I called Bob and I said, hey, Bob, were you last Saturday night, were you guys at this location? And there's this long pause on the phone. Bob goes, yeah, how did you know that? Because no one outside of his group obviously knows where they're at. They haven't broadcasted it anywhere. I said, was there gunfire? And did you guys leave around 2 a.m.? And again, there was like a 30-second pause when I'm talking to him. And Bob goes, how did you know that? And so I started describing to Bob about these emails, but it's like this constant, I don't really know. I know there's been talk of it being on a local level, but I think this is a federal level. I think someone's just kind of screwing with them to screw with them.
Well, and it's not just the cars and things. They've had helicopters hovering them and pacing them. And I, you know, like with the Facebook accounts, things like that, I think a lot of what's happened to Bob recently can only be done with federal powers. I don't think locals have that much authority.
Right. Yeah. Now, did they give him, I guess with that, I don't know how much detail you guys can share. Did they, of course, after the torn up camp video, did they kind of fill him in exactly what, you know, you said they were going to threaten to charge him with a crime there. Did they fill him in on anything or just kind of confiscate everything? And
no, what happened was, is Bob put it up on YouTube. So there's where the problem began. And what happened was most people don't, Bob's never really shared this part of the story. What happened was, is Bob got an attorney. It was a federal, I don't know if it was a prosecutor or whoever it was. They were talking about throwing Bob in prison. And I asked Bob, were they talking about throwing you in prison? Bob's like, hell yeah, they were going to throw me in prison. They're going to throw me in prison and throw away the key. And so they came up with all these bogus charges against him. Like, you know, he was in between an investigation. He filmed a crime scene. He walked through a crime scene. I mean, on just bogus crime after bogus crime. Well, the attorney he got was emailing back to someone in the Department of the Interior in Washington State and said, and he was naming off these different laws like the Good Samaritan Act and all these different things that would basically, there's no way you can nail this guy for filming this. Their response was, we don't care. The only way they got them to back off, what happened was, is the attorney went back and emailed someone in the Department of Interior in Washington State. And the email basically said, hey, look, we can resolve this now or we can resolve this in court. And I promise you, I will make this into a media circus. And that was the exact words that they used. Well, all of a sudden, the threats and they backed off and they came to some sort of agreement. You know, you need to cut this out of the video and Bob's never to discuss this part of the story or this part of the story publicly. And we'll agree to those terms. And his attorney went back to Bob and said, hey, look, here's the deal. They're going to let the whole thing go, but here's what you need to do. And this isn't Bob telling me this stuff. These are emails that we've come across, I guess is the way I'll put it. Encrypted emails that were out there. And I had asked Bob, is this true? Did this happen? Did this happen? Did that happen? And Bob came back and Bob's like, my wife doesn't even know that part of the story. My wife didn't know that part either. And he was just kind of blown away that I knew as much as I knew. But I'm sorry, I forgot what your original question was.
No, I was.
Oh,
just,
did they fill Bob in? They didn't really.
Told him we're going to throw you in jail. Left it at that.
Yeah, it was more or less. Yeah, it wasn't really. They didn't really fill him in. It was more
unless
or less. Yeah, you're going to be thrown in prison, and here's why, and deal with it. And he probably would have been thrown in prison if he didn't have the attorney step forward and say, sorry, that's not going to happen.
And then it was that he started getting these weird emails and things.
Yeah, right, then the harassment started.
Yeah, if he's got more harassment that's, you know, continuing, you know, if he talks to his lawyer and the lawyer gets back a hold of him and tells him, hey, you know, you guys, we agreed to this, but it's not ending here. I don't think, of course, that they want to publicly talk about all this, but it looks like if they want to keep up with harassing him, that's where it's going to end up.
Or Bob will disappear.
Yeah, there's that. But I would think he should probably keep talking to his lawyer there to make sure that, you know, keep the form of probably, you know, daily contact just to let him know what's going on, even how minor it is or what he may consider minor. But I don't, you know, it's hard to say what these guys, you know, are thinking. They probably say, okay, you know, we've got an active site in this area. We can go in here and, you know, we'll throw this jurisdictional federal bullshit at these local level guys and they'll back down. And you get some law enforcement that does, and then others say, well, you know, you guys are in our jurisdiction here. You need to share whatever information or what you guys are doing. And if they don't, then it's, you know, a lot of them say, well, my guys are still going to be out there, so, you know, be careful. But it's just kind of a scary thought that you got a lot of these guys, you know, that are running around or, like Jack said, showing up, you know, when regular law enforcement's around there. And I would think that, you know, it was good what Jack was doing, of course, trying to figure out what was going on or who these guys were.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's like the guests we had who talked about, you know, they went on the missing persons call and they had all the different law enforcement people there in search and rescue. And then these same two guys that Jack described and talked to happened to be there, but he didn't pursue it to the point Jack did.
Yeah. The description he gave John and to kind of fill you in on it. So we've had probably off the air, I would say, what would you say? Well, 10 times as many cops as we've had on the air.
Oh. Easily, yeah, easily.
And what happened was they started describing these guys that would show up. And it was always the same type of situation. It was like they got called out on a 911 call. They started poking around too much. I think one guy had snapped pictures of footprints, snapped pictures of a handprint that was like 10 feet up on a window.
Right, and they confiscated it.
They confiscated it. But it's those type of stories that you get from, and these are police officers that are saying these stories. And then the story is, well, then these two guys showed up and it's like, okay, well, describe the two guys. I think anymore, Will and I go, well, does one have a beard and is one kind of clean cut? Is one kind of a dick and one's kind of a nice guy? And it's like, how do you guys know that information?
It's always the same two guys.
Because you're hearing it from everywhere.
Very general description of these two guys. And they seem to, when they show up, they seem to run the show when they show up. Like Jack was saying, how he got suspended. It seems like these guys show up and they run the show. Well, who are these guys and why do they run the show when they show up?
Right. Did he, did Jack ever by chance get a name or anything from these guys or just a license plate?
He got their first names, and I believe it, and one was Sam, and I think the other was Chris, but we'll have to ask him, but I'm pretty sure that's what he called them. But we didn't get any last names, of course.
Yeah, I'm wondering if, you know, if his boss was filled in a little more by these guys, or I would think that he would be, you know, rather than...
I would assume so, yeah.
Yeah, than just suspend him for thinking he was interfering with, you know, he's interfering with another agency that's in their jurisdiction, that...
I wonder, too, if there wasn't more of a threat than just pulling federal funding, too.
Right. Yeah, they're, you know, because a lot of these agencies, you hear about the federal funding and, hey, we're going to give you guys money for this, you know, new equipment and all that. But, of course, there's always one excuse after the next why the equipment or why the agency didn't get funding. You know, I would think unless they're really getting... you know, a lot of money from a federal agency, I would pretty much, you know, tell these guys, hey, you know, you need to let us know what's going on or get the hell out of our town.
Exactly. So there must be something more, some kind of leverage that they have that, you know, us regular folks certainly don't know about.
Yeah, I'd be curious what type of other jobs they're offering.
John, yeah, no
that,
kidding.
That would, you know, you know, the federal was going to tell Jack that, you know, federal there, hey, you know, it's not a bad gig, but knowing him, they would probably hire him, like you said, at a GS-7 there, and he'd be sitting behind a desk, you know, in some small town Idaho.
Well, they were going to send him to Kentucky or someplace like that.
Yeah, it probably wasn't for the fact that they wanted him on the team there.
No, but I don't think it was either. I think both Will and I agree they were kind of giving him misinformation or stuff we already know.
And that's pretty much what our friend Mr. Black said, too, you know, that it wasn't on the level what they were offering.
Yeah, they should have, Jack should have locked the guys up there when, because he said when he had his other encounter, these guys were close by, right? And they had audio recordings?
Not just audio, they had video. When they came into his chief's office, he got off shift early that morning and went home and went to bed. He said he'd only been in bed about 3 hours. The chief called him at home, said, you need to get in here right away. When he showed up at the chief's office, these guys were sitting there, and they had video with audio of him and the deputy, you know, shining their lights. They saw the eye shine, and he heard this thing roar right behind the cruiser. And, of course, like Jack said, he saw their faces and everything else on the film. So whatever it was they talked to the chief about before he arrived, it was more than just them saying, hey, he needs to stay away from this. There had to be some kind of leverage, some kind of a, you know, at least heap or a credible threat that he perceived that something they could do to him or the department. I mean, it had to be more than just, you know, pulling funding. I don't see that as that big a threat. The chief might have said, hey, you know, big deal.
Yeah, and then also, too, these guys know, you know, how these animals are and what they're doing, and you know, they're out there when this encounter's happening, putting these guys in jeopardy and not stepping up to the plate when they know exactly what can happen. And then they march,
see,
you know, force in the office there and
right.
And pull that crap.
And, you know, the big concern I think I have, and I think we all have, is, you know, if the government knows about this, or at least certain people in the government know about this stuff, and if people are being killed out there and nobody's being told about this, that creates a huge problem.
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, whether they like it or not, you know, these little run-ins with these agencies, it's going to come out publicly, I would think, soon enough because of, you know, like encounters with Jack there. Somebody's going to get suspended, and there's going to be a lawsuit against the department. Well, then the federal government's going to get dragged into it because they were part of the initial investigation of why he got suspended or why he lost his job. There's a lot of different avenues, you know, that law enforcement can take, these guys that are getting harassed, but I'd be really interested to talk to one of these federal guys, though.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess if they're listening, they probably find out soon enough.
Yeah,
that's right.
But,
All three of us are looking for work.
Yeah,
that's right. You can hire us all.
I'll go to hell and tell people they saw a bear.
Just gonna throw your credibility in the toilet. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of funny though that Jack had mentioned that you know we talked to Eric there because we just got back a couple days ago from New Mexico area. Yeah, a lot of interesting stuff going on over there.
You know, John, why don't you go ahead and tell us about, we ended with your first encounter. Maybe you could continue with that and then sort of fill us in on what's been going on in New Mexico.
Yeah, well, the first encounter, of course, when I was eight, that it was pretty much ended there when I talked to my dad. And like I said, it was quite a while before I went up again with my dad. And if we did go up, it was just day trips we would take up there. And I think he knew deep down inside that something scared the hell out of me when we were up there. But he never, after that, never really talked about it. You know, I'd thought about it for years, but of course, being 8 years old, it wasn't like I jumped right into doing any research or anything like that. You know, I constantly thought about it anytime I was in the mountains. You know, I went on with my life as best as I could. And about 31 years later, kind of across the valley where I am, I do a lot of waterfowl hunting from October through January. This area sits kind of, about 10 miles east of San Benito County there, that mountain range there. And there's wildlife refuge, a few thousand acres, just in the South Grassland area. I had hunted out there with my dad since, I was able to hold a gun. And never anything strange or out of the ordinary. As I got older, you know, my dad passed away, and I continued to hunt with these guys out there on our club. A lot of these guys are older, of course, that hunted with my dad. So when we'd hunt, we'd have to get up early, so everybody pretty much was in bed by 6-7 o'clock in the evening. Well, I used to like to go out and fish because we had good areas to fish there. South of our property. Here back in 2009, I had started to fish out there. I guess it was close to midnight, and it was in December, so it was probably in the mid-40s here. I had just gotten started and was looking through some messages on my phone, and as I'm sitting there, I get startled by a rock that hits the water. I jumped up because I'm sitting out there in the dark, and of course, there's nobody that's around us there. There's, you know, the next club's probably a couple miles away, but they would come in from the east side directly across where I guess the rocks came from. It's just part of the wildlife area that no one hunts, but it's still maintained as kind of preserve and area for, you know, a lot of other animals. They just kind of mark it off and don't allow hunters in there. Well, as one rock hits the water, I jump up, a second rock hits the water. And pretty soon I'm having, you know, rocks hit the water. They hit up on the bank where I'm at. And by this time I have my gun out. And I also had, one little handheld spotlights with me. So I'm looking all around and I can't, you know, there's nobody standing within distance. Well, I see that the rocks are coming from the area across, probably, you know, a good 50, 60 yards across the way in this area. Well, I'm thinking that this is, you know, somebody's out there that's throwing rocks, but I couldn't imagine who because it's 40 degrees out and that area of the land over there is partially flooded. I shined my spotlight in the general area to let them know that I was armed and I wouldn't hesitate to fire if I get hit by a rock. And shortly after that, it started as a very low roaring sound. I hear a lot of these encounters that said it went to a higher pitch, but this stayed low. Yeah, it was a roar, and it carried on for quite, I couldn't tell you. I was so scared at the time.
How far do you think away it was?
I want to say it was probably 50, 60 yards, I'm guessing.
It's pretty close then.
Yeah, and this, you know, when this thing roared, you know, I felt the vibration when this thing roared. And of course for a second there, you know, I froze because I'm thinking that somebody's over there throwing rocks. So I'm trying to decipher now, you know, I've got an animal sound coming from there, but I got something that's throwing rocks and I'm trying to put all this together. Well,
yeah, the two don't match up.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't even, I wasn't thinking, you know, this is, you know, some Bigfoot encounter or anything like that. It threw me for a loop. And, you know, and it scared me pretty bad there. And even though I was armed, I realized, okay, I need to get the hell out of here because whatever's over there is, you know, sounds big and angry. So I just kept a gun in one hand and light another enough to grab my pole and get out of there. And I left everything else there. I went back to kind of our compound area where lights were on and everything, which was probably back now a little over 100 yards away from where I was fishing. So now I guess not too far of a distance, but I guess a safe distance from where this thing was growling from. And I turned out all the lights outside, and I listened for a minute. And as I listened, I would hear it sounded like a couple of rocks banging together. I'd hear a clicking sound, and I would take a few steps down our driveway to see if I can hear it better. Well, our driveway's graveled, so it's kind of hard to walk really quiet. So each time I'd take a few steps, this would stop. So I would stop, and I would listen, and then I would hear the clicking again. Well, I still didn't have enough nerve to, you know, to go back across or to shine the light over there. So I eventually came back inside and didn't get much sleep. And when I went out to hunt the next morning, we always meet before we go out to hunt there. And I just asked guys there, if they asked me how the fishing was, and I told them that it wasn't too good at the time. And I'd asked them if they had heard anything. And a lot of the guys said, no, they were tired or they were asleep. They had the TV on or, so nobody heard anything. Well, I didn't mention, you know, I couldn't mention this to these guys because I could only imagine, you know, all the crap I would have taken. So
sure.
I kind of let it go. And then I, you know, this was bugging me for quite some time after this. So I put this encounter, I forgot which site I put this encounter on, but I was contacted by a researcher from Oregon, of all places. And he read what had happened to me. He started asking me questions, and I still wasn't putting two and two together. I said, you know, it's got to be something else. You know, this isn't the Sierras. This isn't, you know, their habitat.
Right.
And he says, well, let me put you in touch with a researcher in your area. So this guy gets a hold of me, and I eventually take him out to where this occurred about a month later. When he went out there, I showed him where, you know, the rocks had been coming from and where this roar happened. And he said, you know, is there a way to get across over this? We had to drive back out on the main road, drive down, and it took us about a half hour to get back into the spot that had there's a lot of trees and a lot of high tules in there. He kind of pushed his way through. He pushed his way through. He called me, and he said, you need to come here and take a look at this. So as I pushed my way through the tules, there was an avenue. It looked like somebody had backed a small vehicle through these tules. Oh, had made a path through there, probably almost 100 yards long, and then it came to an area where the tules were pressed down, probably in about a 10-foot kind of half circle
kind
there.
Kind of a circle, yeah.
Yeah, and he said, all right, well, drive back over there. And he says, I want to see where you were standing at the time. So I drove back around to where I was when I was fishing that night. And I couldn't see him. I couldn't see him in there, of course. He had to hold up a couple of things. But he showed me how, you know, where whoever it was or whatever it was standing in here. So I thought, okay, well, I guess we got this figured out. So I drove back around to pick him up. Well, as I drove around to pick him up, he's standing there near the bank of the dirt road, and he's taking measurements down on the dirt. I thought, what's this guy taking measurements of? And I get out there, and he has, you know, he had found a couple. One was a partial track, and then he had a pretty good track that went off the other side of the road there. But the one full, complete track, I guess, measured out just slightly over 16 inches. So, you know, now, of course, he's, you know, he's hell-bent to see where this thing was going. But at that time of the year through the fields, there was just, you know, it had alfalfa, and you could see, I guess, where this thing had walked, but there wasn't any really...
you wouldn't see any prints, yeah.
Yeah, there weren't any other prints, and, you know, then he starts asking me, hey, are you, you know, you understanding this now? I still was, you know, I was still kind of skeptical despite of what I'd seen, you know, when I was younger. And I eventually told him about that. And he said, well, to let you know that he had taken a couple of reports across in those San Benito Mountains, he said, about 2 years prior. And that he had also taken a report from another hunter that was at a club just west of us a couple of miles. And I guess the hunter there went out one morning to hunt, and one of these things stood up in the tules, ran across one of the ponds, and he grabbed his dog, turned around, got back on his quad, and went back to his trailer, waited till it got light, and then drove out of there and never hunted again. So this kind of, after this, it's kind of, this is what started me getting more interested in the subject and finding out, hey, you know, these things do make sounds. And because I had no idea of the sounds that these things made. You know, when I was young, I didn't, you know, there wasn't a sound that this thing made at me. It, you know, it didn't throw anything. So this was kind of new to me.
Now, you guys just came back from New Mexico. What's happening in that area?
Well, like, I guess they were there in September. Of course, a lot of the foliage had changed there. Eric was talking about that a lot of the native people in that area, when they were there, or Native Americans, were, you know, saying that these things would come around every so often in cycles in the years past. Well, now they seem to be staying there year around. And when Eric and I were there, we started looking, you know, where these encounters were happening. And of course, there was a lot of snow that was on the ground there, so it made it easy to see any animal tracks in and out of there. And we could see that there, where these encounters had been happening, that, you know, there's an abundant supply of food that's going in and out of there. And it appears that with all the food that these animals have around there, that they're not leaving the area anymore at certain times of year. They're just staying around there.
No reason for them to leave.
Right. And plus, the encounters seem to be becoming more aggressive towards people. That, you know, they're seeing these things, they're getting, you know, some people are getting, you know, growled at. You're seeing one of the encounters, the boy told us that one of these animals, you know, showed its teeth to him, growled mm-hmm. at him quickly, and then turned around and, you know, and ran off.
That sort of goes in line with what Mark Dobbs told us a while back when Jack mentioned the lip flip. That's something that a lot of primates do in the wild. You know, rather than get into a physical altercation with another animal, they will do that display sort of a threat to sort of, you know, determine who's going to back down. Because,
right.
You know, in nature, if animals get in a fight, it's usually a deadly encounter for one or both animals. So they sort of prefer not to do that, but they'll go to all these lengths of threatening. And that's exactly what, you know, he said he would expect to hear that in these encounters, you know, this lip flip that anthropologists call that primates do, you know, baring their teeth and such.
Right. And you're hearing that a lot more, you know, and like in these encounters, a lot of, you know, from what Eric was explaining, a lot of other primate behavior, you know, that were
exactly
before that these animals, people see them walk off and then they say, well, it disappeared. You know, they bring in that whole paranormal thing that, you know, I don't know where it comes from, but that
somebody's wild imagination.
Exactly. You know, when the more plausible answer is it dropped down on all fours and ran off.
Yeah, right. Or, and I know you're familiar with the term tachypsyche. I think in a lot of these occasions, people are so outside of their frame of reference that they have almost a post-traumatic stress, you know, related incident where they black out part of the incident.
Exactly.
You know, so if it disappeared in front of their eyes, it literally did to them, not in reality, but in their perception, it disappeared.
Yeah, because there can be a matter of seconds when somebody has something traumatizing happen to them, and they may take their eyes off of it, and they thought, well, it was just a split second. They could have been standing there for a minute or even 2 minutes.
I can definitely relate to that.
Yeah, your whole encounter was listening to that was I could imagine was pretty hair raising.
Well, and it's the what Will was just talking about, the tacky psyche. It's always bothered me why there was so much time that passed when it really didn't feel like we were there that long. And it felt like it was constant. It never really felt like we were just kind of sitting around for an hour waiting for the next thing to happen. It felt like one thing after another happened. And then like 3 hours are gone and I can't really tell you what happened to the 3 hours. And I kind of think it was more my brain trying to deal with and my brother's brain trying to deal with what was going on more than just, you know, I've heard, you know, flute players will tell me, well, you probably entered a different dimension and that didn't
right.
happen.
When it's our own minds that, yeah, it's our own minds that do that, those things. And it alters time, it alters perception, you know, feelings, all those things.
Well, it's funny how the brain works. You know, like I was almost in a motorcycle accident and it didn't hit me until the other day. I was up on Yakult Mountain actually this morning and I was filming stuff I'm going to put up on the website, but I don't know why I thought of it. I thought of this motorcycle accident I was almost in. And what happened was I was, and I'll tell you this story real quick, but it's kind of relevant. I was behind a semi-trailer in Utah, and in Utah, out on their highways, speed limit's 75, which means everyone's doing 90. A lot of these tractor trailers, you know, they're doing 80, 85 miles an hour out there. And I was behind one, and I was blocked in with a guardrail to my right and a car off to my left and a car behind me. This is going to sound like crazy talk, but the tire had blown off of the tractor trailer. And I saw it blow off and it was coming towards me when I was on my motorcycle. Now, if that thing would have hit me, I would have been done. But for a moment, and again, this is going to sound like crazy talk, but for a moment, it felt like everything slowed down. And
that's not
I
crazy
was running,
talk.
And I was running at normal speed. You guys have seen The Matrix. It was kind of like that. It was like everything had slowed down, but my brain was still in real time reacting to what's going on. So I had time to like swerve out of the way and not get hit by this tire coming my way or this blown out tire coming my way. And I had swerved out of the way. Now, if you had put me in that situation, any other situation, if you had put me in that situation and said, hey, dodge this, I probably couldn't have dodged it. I probably would have you probably wouldn't be hearing from me today. But it was weird at that moment. I mean, it sounds like crazy talk. But it's like everything slowed down and I was able to react to what was going on.
You hear about guys who talk about, you know, harrowing experiences in combat. And you can relate if you see in the movie Saving Private Ryan where, you know, the captain has an explosion goes off and he can't hear for a moment. And he's just kind of sitting there, you know, towards the end of the movie. And everything is in slow motion. He sees what's going on, but... And the guys, you know, in combat will relate to things like that, where everything kind of slows down. You can actually, they can almost take the time to watch each individual person and what they're doing, when in reality, things are happening in a much faster fluid motion. But it's our own brains that do that. It's not what's going on around them. It's what's going on inside them.
Yeah, and it's actually a great, you know, defense mechanism there. And, you know, like Wes
absolutely.
Said, any other day, it probably would have killed him. And I can relate to, you know, what he's saying that you do, that I've had some close occasions or close accounts when I was working that it did. Things kind of slowed down where you were able to, you didn't realize you could function and do all this. And then you come back to reality and it's, you know what you did, but for a moment you didn't think you'd be able to grasp everything, but Yeah.
Seeing as a police officer, you would be very familiar with that.
Yeah, there's been a few ass-puckering moments that, you know, that caused that. But, you know, like I said, it's a great mechanism for us to have. That, of course, not, you know, in these encounters, because I don't think I'd want anything to slow down, you know, any sooner.
You want to move a little quicker.
And,
yeah,
and I don't know.
I can relate.
Well, and yeah, that's the thing, like, with mine and Woody's encounter, people ask, well, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Why didn't you guys, you know, I don't have a great answer for anyone on any of those questions, but what I can tell you is
that... You can armchair quarterback these situations all you want to, but unless you were there experiencing it, you can't relate to that. I mean,
and your encounter
was different than mine, so, you know, it's all dependent upon the circumstances.
Well, it's like I was just telling someone the other day with regard to our encounter. I don't remember ever really panicking during that whole encounter. I can tell you I wasn't comfortable, and I can tell you I was scared, and I can tell you that I really didn't want to be there at the time, but I don't really ever remember panicking or going into panic mode until it was over.
I didn't panic in my encounter either.
Until I figured I could get out of there.
And I took off running. That's when I went into panic.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about that, Will. It wasn't until I actually got home that, like, my knees were shaking and my hands were shaking, and I was in complete shock at that point. And I was in panic, but in the moment, I wasn't panicked.
Yeah, you deal with it at the moment, and then later, when it kind of sinks in what happened, that's when the feelings sort of get a hold of you, you know. And you experience that part of it, but not during. And I think that's, like John said, that's a great defensive mechanism that we have. You know, it's part of that flight or fight mechanism. And it serves to save our skins when those encounters are going on.
Yeah, and it drains you physically and emotionally afterwards.
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah. I can tell you I was drained for 2 or 3 days afterwards. I mean, I was exhausted, just completely wiped out. But if you'd have seen me after the encounter, you'd been like, how did this guy ever survive? Because my knees are shaking, my hands are shaking, I can barely talk. But during the encounter, I remember very vividly telling Woody, don't drive past it. It can turn the car over, or don't point your gun out the window. Keep a calm head. And that isn't stuff I would normally say. I'd say, let's blast our way out of here. Because that would make the most sense. But in the moment, that's not what I did. In the moment, it's like my head was really clear. I was confused and I was scared, but my head was really clear. But then after, when it was all said and done, then I was a mess afterwards.
Yeah, and there's a lot of guys, probably wouldn't be too surprised in law enforcement that, you know, you see it with regular people and you think, hey, this guy's trained a lot. He has all this knowledge about this. But instead of being able to function through that, they completely lock up, you know?
Yeah, people are people. I mean, you can get so much training, but, you know, you don't know until you go into the trial by fire, I guess.
Right, right.
As we wrapped up this show, my mind was constantly on Jack and the 911 call he had been sent out to. It seemed a little too coincidental for my taste. The following day, we brought him back. Here's what happened.
So what we wanted to do was to talk to you about when you had to get off the call the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could maybe run down what happened after that.
Well, I got dispatched to a 911 hang up. So, you know, like y'all know, I hung up and apologized. Get to the location. I was like, it was 5 minutes down the road. It wasn't very far. Anyways, get down the road and, get there. And the address they gave me was a, you know, not an abandoned house per se, but a vacant house. So, you know, I called dispatch and said, hey, look, you know, this house is vacant. Are you sure you give me the right address? Well, then, for whatever reason, something inside of me said, you know what, take a picture of the damn MDT screen. So I did. So they said, no, that's where the 911 hangup is. I said, the house is vacant. It's abandoned. There's nobody here. So they come back and they said, well, we probably did give you the wrong address. It's the next house over. I go over there and lady said, no, we hadn't been on the phone. So I went and called dispatch and I said, it was a bogus call. Don't worry about it. Just go ahead and call me back in service. So, I get back and I'm patrolling and all of a sudden, about 9:30 or so, I get a phone call from my chief and he's hopping mad. And I said, what the hell's the problem? And he said, how come it's taking you an hour and 20 minutes to get to a dispatch call? And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? It's not taking me that long. And he's like, yeah, it did. And I said, no, it didn't. And they said, well, the mayor just got off the phone with the feds and I just got off the phone with her. And it took you an hour and a half to get to a dispatch call. And I said, no, it didn't. I got a call at like 8:05, showed up at 8:10. They gave me the wrong address. I got a picture of the MDT screen on my phone. You do? And I said, yes, I do. Shows me called for service, out for service, and on scene. And he goes, he said, I'll be here in about 30 minutes. I said, that's fine. So he come and set up and he looked at it. He said, okay. He said, we're going to find out what the hell this is all about. And I said, well, I can tell you what the hell it's about. So I told him. And I said, yeah, I was on the phone. Yeah, it was a personal phone call. But the minute they called, dispatched me to that 911 hang up, I got off, said, hey, I got to go. Bye. He's like, well, I never said you couldn't take personal phone calls. And we're going to find out what the hell this is all about. Well, in the process of tracing where the call come from, we discovered that it came from Epic, which is, it's kind of a, it's an intelligence center. And, it's got like 10 or 12 different law enforcement agencies. Nobody's owning up. So, what? The only thing I can figure out is, taking into account that I kept hearing clicks and beeps, we were being taped and they wanted me off the air as quick as possible. And right now, I'm not so sure my phone's not tapping out.
Let me ask you a question. You said the mayor had been on the phone with feds in regards to this 911 call. Any thoughts on why the feds would be involved in that call to the mayor?
Your guess is as good as mine. The only thing I can think of is that it had to do with earlier accounts. And since my boss was not going to fire me, they figured they'd go after the mayor. And we're in a tenuous situation with the city council as it is. Mayor doesn't like us. We don't like the mayor. We think she kind of blows off everything. She thinks that we're a bunch of hillbillies with guns and nightsticks and got mirrored sunglasses going out beating up on the color folks. Case. We don't hammer the local populace with tickets. We pull you over. We got 3 or 4 violations on you already. We try to be decent towards the citizens, but we're not going to have the citizens, well, I'm such and such council member's daughter. You can't do this. Well, actually, if you're doing 75 in a 25, you're getting a ticket. Sorry, I don't care who your daddy is.
Right.
So, and that's my only guess is that since I couldn't get any kind of headway with my boss originally, I think they were going after the mayor this time.
Yeah, so, yeah, it sounds about right.
Keep going up the ladder until I get the desired result.
That 911 call was a little bit too coincidental last night.
It really was. It was way too much right there on the spot. And unfortunately, they got it right at a crucial time because I'd like to pick the other guy's brain because I want to make sure I'm not going nuts. Because this is, who in their right mind comes, I don't care what federal agency,
comes in and tries to get somebody fired or gets them suspended and say, well, you know, it's dereliction of duty and he's interfering with a federal investigation. We ought to get him for obstruction. And, wait a minute. How am I obstructing your investigation? If anything, I'd help you out. I got nothing to hide. So, you know, go figure.
You know, one interesting tidbit that I wanted to throw in there, and I just recently sent Wes this, and I don't know if you heard it, Wes didn't hear it, but when Ken was on with us in the beginning, and I did notice it after he mentioned it, he contacted me, he said, did you notice in the background they were playing from the movie The Legend of Boggy Creek, the Travis Crabtree song?
Yeah, I couldn't place it, but yeah, I remember hearing.
Yeah, I noticed it too, and I thought, well, maybe somebody had their one of the guys had their TV on, and when he said that, I thought it clicked. I thought, yep, that was the song, and he said maybe that was sort of an in your face joke that we're listening to, and that particular song.
It could be, you know, and here's what else is kind of strange. Not that my personal computer at my house has been tampered with, or, you know, I'm not seeing the cursor jump. But there's some, like, files I know that was in there are missing. And that could just be my imagination running wild with me right now. Because right now, I'll be honest with you, I'm a little boogered. You know, I'm not straight up honest. I'm scared shitless because these guys work with impunity. They don't operate under the same veil I do, or at least they're doing stuff that if it ever come to light and fingers really started pointing, they would definitely be called on the carpet through a, you know, a Senate subcommittee hearing wanting to know what the hell are you doing to the general populace.
I would say at the very least, yeah.
There's files missing out of my computer that I know are there, and some of it has nothing to do with Sasquatch. Some of it has nothing to do with these things. It's, you know, pictures I took when I was in Afghanistan. Why the hell would you want a picture I took when I was in Afghanistan? That makes no sense. You know, I told my wife, I said, when you get off the computer, make sure you disconnect the router. I don't want them having access to our computers.
I told Wes, I said, I think next week we need to have another roundtable, you know, with kind of the same lineup we had the other night, with a couple of additions. One is an IT expert who had it pegged and sent me a message, which I posted on a blog on the website. And Mr. Black came back and said he was 100% correct in what he said. So he might shed some light on these missing files and things. And the same thing happened to Bob Garrett, too.
Yeah, well, and that's what's wild about this whole mess. It's not one person they're going after. They're going after anybody that's associated with the poor guy. They're already pissed at me for what I did. I think they're still holding a grudge. I pulled them over for doing a 90 and a 55. You know, how dare you do that? You know what? You run through my town speeding and you ain't running code, by God, you're going to get a ticket.
You know, it's funny.
And I didn't even write him a ticket.
I was listening to the show last night, and that part made me bust up laughing again. I had to mute out when we were on the show the first time, but the second time I heard it, I started busting up laughing the second time.
Well, I remember when you first told me that, I had to laugh too.
Well, yeah, you know, the funny thing is, and it's not unusual, it's not uncommon, when I was a Fed, I actually, there were times I ran code without running lights. And it wasn't because I was trying to be covert. That had nothing to do with it. I just, you know, all of a sudden, and, you know, I'm getting a phone call. Hey, you better get here. This guy's about ready to jump ship. You're going to lose him. You know, I slam her right down to the floor and forget to turn the lights on. That happened. But, you know, for crying out loud, when you got a road that's, you know, granted, it was in the evening, but it still had traffic on it. You don't run 90 and a 55 and not turn your lights on. I don't care who the hell you are. So, you know, unless you got a medical emergency and somebody's dying right in your lap. So, you know, that's my thought on it. And
I would have wrote him a ticket.
You know, kind of think about it, and I probably should have.
I would have made him walk the DUI line. I'd been like, step out, driver. I would have pulled my gun good. Out and been like, driver, hands, step out of the vehicle. Passengers, step out of the vehicle.
Make them do SFSD. Yeah, and I thought about that. I'm like, no, that might be pushing my luck. I'd probably find my dead body alongside the road.
Yeah, I'm sure they would have found some way to get back at you.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Keep your gun on them. Definitely. I need to hear the ABCs. And while you walk this line.
They don't do the ABCs anymore. At least that's not the prescribed 3 tests that they normally do. So, they don't do that anymore. It's horizontal gaze nystagmus. The walking turn, you do 9 steps and you have to turn on a heel spin and then walk 9 steps toe to heel. And the one-legged stand.
You should have handcuffed them and separated them and questioned them like normal cops do.
You know, here's the problem with that. I think I'd have been in a hell of a fight with that. Because that one dude, the clean-cut guy, was none too happy with me. So, I think that might have caused more of a problem than Fitch.
Yeah.
So...
Jack, I want to thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing what happened to you the other night when we were on the show, when you got called away. We appreciate you sharing that information. And I just want to thank you for coming on.
You bet. No problem.
Next on the show, I wanted to welcome Bob Garrett. I know we've been talking about him for the last couple episodes, and I thought it was important for him to come on and discuss what is going on.
Let's start with a few nights ago, Bob. If you can talk about your YouTube channel going down, your, you know, all the stuff that happened to you the other night.
I discovered that I couldn't get on Facebook, and I was basically trying to reset my my password, and apparently I didn't have an account anymore. So I talked to Tim, and I said, Tim, check and see if my Facebook's up. So Tim checked, and he said, no, it says, no person available like that, no account. And so that was surprising, and I thought that, that's their problem, apparently. And so I went in and I tried to make another account. And it wouldn't let me make an account. So I tried it 2 or 3 more times, and I just could not make an account. And then I found out, I went over to Blog Talk. I couldn't get on my Blog Talk. I couldn't get in the studio. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't create a show. And so I tried to reset my password. They would send me the code. I would type it in. I would hit on it and try to reset my password, and it would not do it. So I did this, literally, I did this about 6-8 times. And so I didn't know what the heck was going on. You know how Blog Talk is. And I called Tim and I said, see if you can get on Blog Talk. So Tim got on Blog Talk. Everything was fine. And I said, okay. So I tried it a few more times. I could not get on Blog Talk. So then I went to, I was going to upload a video that we recently have had gotten. I went to my YouTube. Lo and behold, I had no YouTube. As a matter of fact, I was banned from YouTube. And I asked, he and I called Tim. I said, listen, see if you can find my YouTube channel. And he said, no. And he said, anyway, I told him, I said, well, go and, on the page and see if, my videos are okay. And, so he went on the show page and, he said, no. He said, it says that they're, unavailable. And that's when I guess it was pretty stupid of me, but that's when it finally hit me that this is just like before, but even worse. Before, I was locked out of everything. This time, it just doesn't exist.
You know, they're obviously trying to mess with you and discredit you. And Will and I have talked about this behind the scenes on what is actually happening with you. I wanted to know, now, you had mentioned to me that obviously someone was in your computer. Your computer is being hacked, like someone was looking for something. Can you talk a little bit about that? And then the other thing I wanted to ask you is if you talk a little bit about, I had mentioned the other night about the chat room, how the same person kept showing up with different numbers behind their names. Yeah. If right, you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I will. I will. I don't mind. I'm very angry, guys. I mean, I really am angry, you know.
And you've got every right to be.
Absolutely.
I just want to bite something or somebody. I just want to punch one of these guys in the face. And I don't have anything to strike out at. Do you understand what I mean? I'm very frustrated.
Right.
What was going on with my computer was this prompt kept coming up, would come up, and this code would be written. I would see my cursor go, and I'm sitting here looking like there's a ghost in my machine, and my cursor is moving. It goes to the prompt, it clicks the prompt, and this is some kind of black screen, and I don't really know anything about this stuff, but
right, it's a command prompt. They're executing a program. It's what you're describing is a command prompt in Windows.
All this code is suddenly, that's what a friend of mine told me that it was. It was code. I mean, all these zeros, all these ones, these X's, and I think some twos and threes and all different kinds of stuff are being, you know, just, like somebody who can type 50,000 words a minute. I mean, it's just going, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Well, I was on the phone with a couple of people. One that's very tech savvy was called real quick. Okay. And he told me, he said, disconnect. He said, disconnect your modem, disconnect everything. So I disconnected. Well, guess what? This little icon comes up, and apparently they remote connected me or something somehow. And they're going through my computer. Somebody is going through my computer. I don't know who this was, but it was going through my computer. Well, lo and behold, you know the video that I tried to put up? Okay, I'll tell you what this video was. This video is we tracked in this very remote area. We tracked two Sasquatches that were chasing two very large hawks. Okay. They had no warning about us coming up behind them, nothing, because they were worried about these hawks. And this was an extremely good situation for us. And so we are going behind them. My group, you know, Tim and another fellow, I don't want to mention his name on the air. We get up to where these washouts are. The sides of them were about 20 feet up to get up to the other side. Okay, and then it goes down, a part of it goes down into the river. Okay, we found these dens that were dug out of the clay in this area, in these washouts, these deep washouts. Well, we were documenting, me and the other fellow were documenting these dugouts. Okay, they were deep, they were big. Also, we were getting 17-inch footprints in the same area, and we were documenting that. And some of the footprints were good enough for us to actually, you know, pour and make cast of. Okay, we didn't have the material. We were going to go back and get it. And then all of a sudden, Tim says, look at this. Tim is recording on his video cam and recording on mine. We are getting two Squatches who are looking at us. One is looking back and forth at the other one like, what do we do? What do we do? Well, the other one is staring at us because it's madder than hell. And we, you know, we got them dead to rights right here. And we're recording them. It was good daytime footage. Okay. We get flanked, of course, which is normal procedure for these guys. They flanked us. And we decided that we would just, you know, go ahead and back out. And we started backing out because I don't like getting flanked by these damn things. After we finally got out and onto the old logging road that's heads to the river, we were coming away from the river, we were getting, you know, stick snaps and all of this stuff. Well, it was really a good day, I guess you might say, a little scary. And we got home. We're going to put this stuff out. And I decided, well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and put this out. This is fantastic stuff. To make a long story short, they took those videos, or somebody took those videos out of my folders. They're not there anymore. They're gone. As well as some other photos that I've never put out. And this, I guess, is what somebody was doing. As they were checking my videos and everything, they decided that they wanted to take those. Okay, the same day we were leaving out of the woods, we get out of there, and guess what? Okay, this DPS goes right up our ass, right on the tailgate of the pickup truck. And he is flying right down the road behind us, just like that. I mean, if Tim had tapped his brakes, the guy would have smashed right into us. So anyway, he backs off a little bit and probably ran the tags and everything. I don't know what he was doing. And then he backs up, then he comes on to us again, just boom, like he's gonna hit us. And I'm watching out through the rearview mirror, you know, on the side mirror, and Tim is, you know, pretty upset. And all of a sudden he goes around us as fast as he can and he turns off. He just disappears as fast as he appeared. But the thing about it is that he wasn't going on a run. He was messing with us. I'm sorry, I might sound a little mad, but I am angry.
No, I mean, you have every right to be, Bob.
They took those videos, and or somebody took those videos. I don't know who this is, but they took the videos, and they took some pictures. Yeah, I'm sorry, I got to slow down.
No, you're good.
No problem.
You're good. You know, Bob, one thing I think a lot of listeners don't realize, and I'm careful how I say it, because there's a lot of things you could brag about in your life and you don't, and you're not that type of guy. You're people that don't know you, you're not the boastful type. You're a good guy, and that's what people out there need to understand, that is that you're a good man. And
I appreciate it.
But there's a lot of things. Well, there's a lot of things you could brag about. I know stuff you and I have talked about off the air. There's stuff that you could brag about in your life, and you don't. It's stuff I would brag about. It's stuff. I mean, I'm not a good man though, but I would sit and brag about it all day long, and you don't.
Thank you, guys. You guys are great, man, you know.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things like that. And so, you know, when you're talking about these different things, I think that it's important for people to understand your character. This whole BS that's going on with you is more or less something to either A, make you look crazy, or B, make you look bad. And, you know, they tried to do that with the torn up camp, and I think they failed for the most part. I think anyone that has half a brain realizes, hey, you know what? He called 911. They didn't come out. He filmed it. You know, he was trying to render assistance to anyone out there. I think anyone with half a brain would realize that's what actually happened. And if it wasn't, I'd be first to say, hey, you know what? There's something shady going on here, but there wasn't.
Oh, I was just going to say, you can't leave an area like that. You can't leave a camp like that. That'd be like leaving a car wreck with someone burning it, you know, in the car. I'm sorry, that's morbid. But,
you're right.
You know, a boat wreck or something out on the lake or something. You can't do that. It's not in me to leave someone in, you know, powerless or someone that's hurt. I mean, you got to stop and you got to render aid. And when we saw that, we saw how bad it was and everything, we had to look. You know, I've been criticized before for walking around and stuff like that. But what can you do? You've got to stop and try to render aid. And this was obviously a bad situation.
Well, I think, and as you and I discussed, a lot of your comments on YouTube videos weren't from your average users. I think a lot of those were planted. At least that's what a lot of the emails say that we got from our insiders. A lot of those emails weren't really from your average person. It was more or less just to stick it to you. I wanted to know.
Me feel better.
Well, yeah, and it was, there's several emails pertaining to comments on your YouTube and comments that they had made on your YouTube. I wanted to ask you, would you talk a little bit about the harassment? I don't think people grasp how much you guys actually get harassed. And I haven't just heard it from you, Bob. I've heard it from Tim Sermons, the guy you were mentioning before. I've heard it from Lupe. I know he was originally part of your group. Right. It seems like anyone that's out there with you, that's the first thing they talk about is, hey, these guys get harassed nonstop. I think you were the last person I asked about it. It was all the people around you that came out and said, hey, Bobcat's harassed. I mean, we get harassed every single time we go out. And I was wondering if you talk a little bit about some of the harassment you've received while going out looking for these creatures.
Well, you know, it's really mind blowing. Me, Lupe, and Felipe, and my other son Travis and Brandon had been out there, and one of our other team members. You know, I really don't want to say his name because I don't want to get him in the limelight. We were 2 weeks after the camp. We decided that what we were going to do, we were going to go in there. And we were going to stay. Okay, there's a place called Hidden Camp. And it's way back in the brush. It's actually on the corridor itself, just about. The corridor runs right past it. So we went in there. We set up. Everything was fine. Felipe had one of his new gadgets with him. He's a genius. And, you know, for sound. And he had it set up and everything, and it was just dark. And these three cars come flying down this road. Now, I'm talking about an area, guys, that is totally remote. I mean, it is like 7 or so miles back in there. And they came flying up, and they pulled in by the camp, and they come walking down through there, and one of them has this big spotlight, and he's spotlighting me. And I told him, I said, look, turn that spotlight off, or you're going to get shot. I said, you don't come in my camp with a spotlight on and not telling me who the hell you are. I was mad. And I'm in it, too. I didn't know who these people were. We're 7 miles in the middle of nowhere. And here's these three cars pulling up. I mean, you know. And, well, you know, then he tells us that, you know, he's a game warden. He's federal game warden, and there's all kinds of problems here, and we're in trouble and all of this stuff and everything. How in the heck did they know we were back there? You can have a campfire back. Well, you can have a campfire in there, guys, and you can't see it out there on the road, on the trail coming in. You can't see it. They knew exactly where we were. Anyway, they had to go through everybody's guns, and they told us that we were in trouble, and we did this wrong, we did that wrong, and he even practically said that we made our campfire wrong. Good God. And I tried to shake his hand when I found out he was a, you know, federal officer, and I put my hand out, and he said, I don't shake hands. Oh, okay. The heck with you, too. You know, and he wanted to know, he knew where the guns were. He knew where Loopy's gun was. He says, is J.R. in the trunk? And he says, yeah. You know, so Loopy went and showed it to him, and everybody showed their guns and everything. And then they screamed at us because we had our car, you know, our vehicles up in this area, you know, going into the camp itself, which everybody does. I mean, you know, we've camped there during hunting season. Everybody pulls their cars right up in there. Well, anyway, we had to pull our vehicles out because that was bad. And they accused us of making the trail with the cars to go in there. And I mean, it was just total harassment. You know, everything was harassment, harassment, harassment. And the good part of it is that when they finally left, Felipe was hee-heeing, and I said, what? And he said, I got them all on tape. He said, they didn't even ask what that big parabolic mic was. He said, I got them all talking.
Good grief.
So, but that's not, I mean, that's just one example. And, you know, we've been told that our camp could get destroyed just like just like other camps that get destroyed out there if we actually leave the camp. We've had them come up and ask us, you know, how long y'all been gone? Because apparently they must have been watching, and we had just pulled up. How long y'all been gone? And 2 or 3 hours, you know, been on the Lone Star Trail. Well, your camp could be destroyed and torn up just like other camps out here, or, you know, and your camp could be y'all could go missing out here like a lot of other people. I mean, you know, it's just a bunch of bull. I mean, you put your boat in the water, and the next thing you know, you got this guy, this police officer. He's over there. He's a park cop. And he's over there with his loudspeaker, on his loudspeaker going, y'all need to come back up this way. Y'all need to come back here. And so, you know, I said, us? He said, who am I talking to? And I said, okay. So we go up there, and he wants to look at our boat. He wants to look at our motor. He wants to look at everything. You know, it goes on and on and on and on. And it was just constant. And you know, I don't really care if they bug me, you know. But when they wait down here at the entrance of our place, and they pick up my or they stop my wife because, okay, they tell her, I mean, this is at 4 o'clock in the morning. They tell my wife, says, you didn't stop at the stop sign. She says, yeah, I did. No, you didn't stop at the stop sign. We're going to, you know, they want to look through the car. They want to do this. They want to do that. Or they might follow her all the way to her work. You know, that really getting personal to me. I don't care what they do to me or what anybody, you know, what people do to me. you don't mess with my wife or my family. You know, they're stopping Brandon, following him around. They're following us around. They're following me and Travis around. Just the other day, me and Travis came out of the woods and we left and we had a officer's car do exactly the same thing that happened to me and Tim. That was just like 2 days ago. I'm sorry. I'm mad. And I guess I sound mad. I'm sorry.
No apologies. I mean, I'd be more pissed off than you are. One thing I want to ask you, Bob, there was, I can't remember if it was Lupe. I think you had told me that too. Lupe, and I think maybe even Tim mentioned it to me, about these Black Hawk helicopters flying over your guys' head at night when you guys are out in the brush.
Yeah, they, as soon as we hear a good call, Sasquatch call, car door, the car door is where they go. They migrate through here, they make a rounds, and they go back down, and then they come back down river. Okay, there's some ranches where they hit and stuff like that. You know, there's good water on those ranches. They go out there and they hit the feed and things like that. I mean, it's just common knowledge. We'll sit out there sometimes. You will hear the call start, and we know that they're coming. Well, then all of a sudden, there's a small black helicopter comes up out of the woods from across the lake, and they got a big spotlight on, and they're spotlighting all down the corridor. I mean, they even make the turn for the corridor, and they go over us. They've gone over our camps when Lupe and Felipe was out there with us. We had some other people out there with us. You know, they went over the camp. They went down the Lone Star Trail over us, and you know, things of that sort. Yeah, it's nothing new. I mean, I know it might be hard for some people to understand that doesn't have this happen to them. This is real incredible. I mean, it's just totally incredible what they do. And you know, they'll hover over the camp. Site, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's way too much. Than I mean, there's way more to it than just, you know, the occasional game officials out looking around. You know, they seem to be fixated on you guys.
Well, you know, guys, that is because of some of the things that we have. We're not going to put it out, of course. We're not going to put them out. It's because of the camp and what happened in the camp. I've mapped all these areas for over 20 years, and it's not like I got to go look for these things. I know where they are. So, you know, people who say, well, y'all get a whole lot of, action and everything out there, it's because I spent over 20 something years in the Sam Houston, the Angelina, and the Crockett, and I've mapped the maps. I know where the corridor is. I know where they're usually going to be.
Yeah, and to back you up on that, Bob, I've done the same thing myself in the South Mount St. Helens area. So what you're saying is absolutely correct. If you spend the time and the work, you can figure out where they are, what they're doing, and where they're going to be.
That's true. You can. And one of the biggest things that you got to look for when you start doing this is you don't just go out there in the woods, start walking around. You want to look for food sources and wild sources, food sources. You want to, I mean, they love the pigs down here. Okay, you find the pigs. They, you know, they're going to follow the pigs. There's nut trees here. We got wild persimmon. We got wild, you know, other wild fruits. We have pecan in some areas that are wild. We have blackberries. We have grapes. We have tubers and things that they can pull up and eat. And it's kind of like they're hunters and gatherers is kind of the way I look at it.
Yeah, they got
lots of food. Yeah, you got to look for that. You look for that. you go into these areas and you may start finding a sign of them. You know, you map it, you put it on the GPS, and you can go right back to it. It's really not that hard to actually
Yeah, it just requires the effort. And I think a lot of people don't want to put the time and effort into it, you know, but you and I both know that if you do, you'll get results.
Correct. You're perfectly correct. You know, honestly, I just kind of had enough. I kind of surrender, and maybe that's bad. But if they were standing in front of me, I would know what to do. But I'm not tech savvy, and I'm just a simple person, man. I don't know how to fight this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm going to keep doing what I do. And I'm going to keep going out and everything. I'm going to keep going out into the areas, and I'm still going to video and everything and collect, you know, this evidence and that evidence and everything. But I'm, you know, I'm kind of done with the technical stuff as far as social media. I'll never do YouTube again, and I just don't care about Blog Talk anymore either. If they've got the savvy to get into this stuff and do this and everything, and it's almost unbelievable that these and Blog Talk and all this stuff doesn't really know what's going on. I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe they don't. I shouldn't throw them under the bus or anything. It's just, I don't know. It's just kind of unbelievable in many ways to me, guys.
Bob, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I want to, you know, I appreciate you sharing all the information with us and taking the time to talk with us and let us know what's going on. I think it's important for people to hear from you as opposed to hearing it from my lips. To hear what is actually going on with you. So we appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, I appreciate you giving me the chance and letting me do my rant. I'm sorry. I was really angry when I wasn't angry until I got on and we started talking about it, and I'm afraid I got really angry, and I'm sorry about that.
No apologies.
No,
you have every right.
And I would expect to be, yeah, especially with all this crap they're trying to pull and of course, you know, they're trying to label you with pornography, and that's absolute nonsense. it's laughable the stuff these guys are doing.
I don't think they thought out how to attack you. And so they're using, like, from the handbook, how to discredit someone.
Yeah.
I don't think they've actually really thought it out, because, you know, like, oh, you got banned from YouTube for pornography. It's like anyone that knows you, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And you've had a YouTube channel for how many years? You know,
a long time.
It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And it's almost like they're reading from the handbook on how to discredit you, but it's not really applicable in this situation. If they want to discredit me and say that, some people might go, well, you know, I mean, you know, maybe he did post on, you know, but I mean, coming from you, it's like, well, this doesn't really apply to Bob. So it's like they're using the handbook as just kind of across the board, let's nail you. And it's like they're not really using their heads on how to nail you. You know, they can piss you off by pulling your wife over and screwing with you every time you guys go out. But these are old tricks from the same bag. You know what I mean? This isn't anything new to really nail you.
Well, mainly, I'm getting the feeling, and I do have I'm not going to say their name, but I do have a law firm behind me, and they know what I do and everything. I recently today was told that what they're really trying to do, or what these people are really trying to do, is tell me to shut up.
Yeah, I get exactly what it's to let you know. It's like the whole mafia mentality. You know, we're here.
Yeah.
You know, we're here. you know what we're doing. You know we're listening. And we're going to poke you a little bit just to make sure to keep you in line. And that's kind of what you and I talked about the other night, Bob, is that it's exactly what they're doing. They're poking you to let you know, shut your mouth.
I guess they forget which country they live in.
Well, or who they're actually dealing with. And I won't talk about Bob's background because he doesn't talk about it. Bob's a sweet old man, and I hope you don't take offense to that, Bob. But I'll tell you what, they're messing with the sleeping giant. This isn't and I don't want to say too much because I know you don't want to talk about it, but you're the wrong man to really poke around with because and I'm sure they know, but you're the wrong man to really screw around with because and I'll just leave it at that, I guess. You don't want to discuss everything, but you're the wrong man to screw with. I'll put it like that. You know, they're poking a sleeping giant is what they're doing.
You know, I'm very private and kind of, you know, I don't reveal a lot of stuff. And but you know, more about me than a lot of people do. If they were in front of me, they're going to go down. They're going to get punched. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm going to go at them. Yeah, you're right. But this, I can't touch because I don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
Appreciate you guys having me on, and I really enjoyed it. I probably won't do another show anymore. After this.
No, I understand.
If you don't
that.
Mind.
I understand. Yeah. And we thank you for coming on.
I will keep in touch with y'all, and I will probably send y'all some stuff.
Thank you,
Bob. Bob. Well, listen, if you need anything, just let us know.
Absolutely.
I will. Thank you, guys. All right. Appreciate it.
We're going to take a quick break. If you're listening to us on SasquatchChronicles.com, hang tight. We have a forestry worker who had a pretty aggressive encounter with the Sasquatch, along with a fellow co-worker. The gentleman we've been talking about did show up. Mr. Grizzly Adams himself did show up to talk to this gentleman. And the gentleman that we're going to bring on to discuss this encounter claims he knows who this guy is. If you're not listening to us on SasquatchChronicles.com, please visit us. Otherwise, have a great night, and we will see everyone next week.
Someone is a human inviter.